Today, Governor Scott Walker authorized members of the Wisconsin National Guard to carry weapons while on duty. That makes Wisconsin the seventh state to approve weapons for the National Guard since the attack on military facilities in Tennessee last week.
Since that tragedy, the federal military has ordered increased security at recruiting stations and reserve centers, and the governors of Arkansas, Indiana, Florida, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas have all authorized plans to arm guardsmen.
David Gray is with us now to talk about this security measure. He's a Homeland Security professor at Campbell University. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, thank you for having me.
So in our news here in Wisconsin, as we were saying, Governor Walker saying National Guard members will be able to carry arms. The policy still has to be worked out as to how that'll actually work. Other states in on that. What's your reaction to this move from governors around the country?
Well, I think it's a prudent measure. I think it needs to be done. As you've identified, states are moving in that direction.
And then at recruiting centers and other facilities where armed forces members can't currently carry weapons, they're going to be able to do that too. Similar story, do you think? A good idea?
Yes, I think it's a good idea. And again, I think it's the direction that states are going, just because the need for increased security.
Does this send a message, do you think, to potential terrorists who might target these kind of facilities?
I think it does. Clearly it does. The question should be, does it send a strong enough message, and will it, in fact, increase or enhance security? That's the real question.
And there's been criticism in the past, after a 9/11, we change our security at airports. After the shoe bomber, we take our shoes off the airports. We're constantly solving the problem that already happened. Is this something that's, it's an overreaction maybe after one attack, and the next attack will be something completely different?
Well, let me back up and pose this. I think that this is a reaction to a new problem set, something we haven't seen in the past, and that is the self-radicalized lone wolves, for lack of a better term. I think that's an overused and it's lost some of its meaning. But the individual who radicalizes, becomes a militant on his own, that's a U.S. citizen or is here in the United States legally, and they, through different means, they decide to strike targets in the United States. I think that's what this is in reaction to. And this is a major problem for law enforcement at all levels, at the federal level, state, and local. But it's a serious problem.
Oh, and that's a major intelligence challenge, as I understand it. If there's a person who's an operative, a card-carrying member, if you will, of Al-Qaeda or ISIS in the United States, then there might be an intelligence track to find them. With the, as you say, the overused phrase, the lone wolf terrorist, there might be none of that.
That's right. Rob, that's exactly right. It's a major problem. It's a major challenge for law enforcement, intelligence, security forces, and the like. It's just hard to track individuals who they don't travel overseas. They might be influenced by a stint in prison, or they're radicalized by getting online with Al-Qaeda or Islamic State websites. There's plenty of that information out there, plenty of that encouragement out there, and so that's a major problem. It's a major challenge.
One potential objection I've raised has to do with carrying weapons on military bases. I've seen some pushback out there from military officers saying, "Look, we don't have everybody carrying guns. It's a way to help avoid accidental firings, accidental incidents. Could we potentially, in some cases, create more harm than we prevent?"
This is the trick. This is the problem. And you mentioned earlier about the a policy issue. This is the issue. It needs to be a balance between, having security on the one hand, and then having free access on the other. Will it create a problem if you're arming more people? It's going to require different policies and different procedures and the like. It's going to be have to be executed in a different way than what we've done in the future. So,
We're talking to David Gray. He's a Homeland Security professor at Campbell University, talking about new security measures that have been put in place or are in the process maybe of being put in place since the shootings last week at military facilities in Tennessee. The latest news here in Wisconsin, Governor Walker, an executive order saying that National Guard members can be armed in the state. The details of that policy still to be worked out. As states hash out how this works, who carries firearms for National Guard members, what kind of things do you think they should be looking for? What kind of things do you think might be effective?
Well, as far as who, if the question is as far as who is authorized to carry weapons, that would be a decision for the National Guard and individual units and the like. But there's other issues, too. I mean, there's got to be interaction with law enforcement, and that sort of thing, but it's going to have to be a decision with the National Guard, and that that will involve the individual states, the tags, the adjutant general at the different states, but also headquarters National Guard in D.C.
Now, in your day job and your line of work, you work with people who are going to be carrying out various elements of security policy in future. What kind of things are you focusing on there when it comes to this kind of terrorist attack? An individual in the United States, as you say, a citizen or someone here illegally, or I'm sorry, someone here legally who's self-radicalized, maybe based on things they've seen online. What's the state of the art in trying to prevent those kind of attacks?
Well, let me preface the answer with this. The example of the shooter in Tennessee, he spent 7 months in Jordan, which is one way to track foreign travel when they come back. But again, the problem is if they don't go overseas, they stay low, they're underneath the radar. It makes it very challenging. Now, with that being said, back to your question. What are the sorts of things that my students, those who are interested in getting into the Homeland Security field, and also for the practitioners that are currently doing Homeland Security and law enforcement and intelligence and the like, these are some of the things that they're involved with. Intelligence is number one. It should be, and we're certainly learning since 9/11 that intelligence-driven operations is the way to go. And I think we've made pretty good progress at bringing intelligence at the national level, but also at the state and local level. I think we're seeing intelligence utilized at the state and local level, unlike anything we saw before 9/11. But intelligence is a big part of it. And then understanding the ins and outs of terrorism or radicalization. And then there's a whole host of other things. There's psychological issues. There's weapons issues with firearms and explosives, and there's a variety of things that people who are trying to counter this threat, these people need to understand and to work with.
Are there notions of, and I may be making up this term, counter-radicalization, trying to have positive messages, whether from the government, whether from communities around the country, to try to prevent people making this turn to radicalism and violence?
Rob, that is an excellent question. And let me offer this. Both the FBI and NYPD and others, actually, have, and in fact, I published an article not too long ago about this very thing. The process is called de-radicalization. And the logic is this. Look, if there is a process that a person goes through to become radicalized and become a militant, then is there a process where you can deprogram, for lack of a better term, or you de-radicalize them? And there's strong arguments to be made that, yes, you can do that. Now, if you pull the thread on that and you peel the onion back a little bit, what that means is, therefore, okay, if we are seeing radicalized individuals, can we do practical things to be able to bring them back from the brink or, again, de-radicalize them? But it's a great notion. It's a great idea.
Now, getting back to the idea of people at military recruiting stations being armed, military facilities, National Guard members, if it's to the point where they're having to use these arms in response to an attack, I mean, we're in a reactive stance there. Or have we already, in a sense, failed at that point?
Well, it all comes down to resources. I mean, you can make a recruiting station, you can put a tank out front. and 50 armed guards to make it much more safer, but there's it's just cost prohibitive. As far as arming those that are in a recruiting station or a National Guard armory, I mean, you can make the argument that at least if they were armed, they can put up some kind of resistance or some kind of counterforce to an attack. And I see the logic there.
And returning to a point you alluded to earlier, if it's known that these people are armed in these various facilities, that might itself be a preventive, having that information out there?
Yes, I believe so.
But and one more downside, potentially, if a lone wolf, so-called terrorist, knows that, do they just pick another target?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Targets are very important. Targets are not a coincidence. They're not a second thought. Targets are well thought out. And for example, the Tennessee, that was really a strike at the U.S. military. And, you know, the World Trade Center attack, they were very symbolic attacks, the Pentagon. Again, it's not a coincidence that the targets they hit, they're either high value targets or they're politically important or economically they're important. So they'll choose other targets. And again, then the argument is, well, you're going to have to spread your security or your defenses elsewhere. But again, it's a continual battle, if I can use that word, to try to stay ahead of these attacks. And Rob, let me mention one of the things. What we see here with active shooters is firearms. A concern I have is with explosives. The case that I point to is the Times Square attempt bombing several years ago. It failed, but it didn't fail. It detonated, but it didn't explode. And people kind of, you know, go wipe their eyebrows and say, we dodged that bullet. The concern I have is it'll just take one, like the Oklahoma City bombing or the World Trade Center attack number one, then that's going to be, you're going to have a lot of copycats. That's what really concerns me.
We'll leave it there for now. David, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That was David Gray, Homeland Security Professor at Campbell University, with us to talk about increased security measures, including here in Wisconsin, the governor with an executive order arming National Guard members, allowing them to carry arms in the line of duty, all in the wake of the Chattanooga shootings.